Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is John Marks, the editor of CopsAlive.com. I want to welcome you to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. We have a very interesting and a very timely topic today, and that is police stress reduction. And I want to welcome my guest here in just a moment. He is Ed LeClaire. He is a professor of criminal justice. In fact, he has been in the criminal justice field since 1969 as a professor of criminal justice at Salem State College. Since 1978, he has established the first criminal justice degree program and worked with over 30 police departments in the area of domestic violence prevention, community policing, and law enforcement officer stress reduction, which is what we want to talk about. To give you a little bit of background, during the last 15 years, working with dozens of police departments in Massachusetts and Rhode Island here in the United States, Professor LeClaire has researched, designed, and implemented the Law Enforcement Officer Stress Reduction Program, which is a unique training-based program based upon gender and sexual assault investigations, investigator stress reduction management techniques. The police training was an outgrowth of Professor LeClaire's unique training as an intern at the Mindful-Based Stress Reduction Program at the University of Massachusetts Worcester Medical Center, which is the center under the direction of John Kolbat-Zinn, Ph.D., and published their medical research on relaxation response of Herbert Benson, M.D., at Beth Israel Hospital and Harvard Medical School. Ed, that was a mouthful, but what I really want to share is that Ed shared a couple of testimonials with me from police officers that have gone through this program, and I think that's important for other officers to hear that their peers believe that this stuff really works. So let me share a couple of the male officers' responses were, quote, every police officer, no matter what age, rank, or year of service, should learn and practice the stress reduction program daily. And also, that's end quote. Also, quote, if you don't think you're under stress, you're wrong, end quote. I thought that was an outstanding one. That certainly hits home. From a couple of the female officers that responded about this program, quote, trust him, it works, end quote. No messing around there. And last but not least, quote, a great program that focuses and uses tools to take care of yourself when you feel overwhelmed or when you're taking care of others, end quote. Ed, that was a very long introduction. You've obviously had a long and reputable career. Thank you for being our guest here, and welcome.
You're welcome.
Okay, I did the introduction, and obviously I didn't read that as smoothly as I like, but would you please share with us a little bit about your background and what it is you're doing these days and how you can help the officers listening?
Sure. The first thing I want to add, John, is that Kevin Gilmartin's book, Emotional Survival,
yes,
is a critical book that I use along with his videos for all of my training, because it establishes foundation from Kevin, who's a longtime police officer like yourself.
Yes.
But I got involved because I was a typical professor at a college doing research, and I had a National Institute for Justice grant to do surveys in community policing. And I was also doing surveys of police officers. And what I found was that the police were having expressions of stress because they were having these added responsibilities. They needed more training in community policing. And I thought, gee, a lot of this innovation that I was supporting and trying to encourage, which I still think is the right way to go, was also producing stress. So I decided that I would focus on stress reduction. And that was around the early 90s. And so I took a sabbatical and went to six-month internship at the UMass Medical Center,
because
mm-hmm. they had a pain reduction program that worked when all other medical treatments failed, psychiatric treatments would work. And also, I had been reading Dr. Benson's book, Relaxation Response, for several years as well. So I put them both together and went to all the police chiefs that I knew in the area, because I had been working with them now at this point for about 20 years. And they came, and we spent 2 days, because my program is a 16-hour, two-day intensive training program. And they came down the Cape, southern Massachusetts, and we spent 2 days together. And they basically encouraged me to expand it. The second thing that happened was, in Rhode Island, we had a station nightclub fire where 100 people burned to death.
I remember that.
And I was asked to come down and do a training there, and I told them I would, but I didn't know the people. They didn't know me. I didn't know how the trust factor would work, whereas in Massachusetts, after 20, 30 years, people knew me. I decided to go down and said, look, you know, I usually work with small groups because this is a very intimate experience we go through. So maybe 6 or 8 or 10, 12 max.
Wow.
And 50 people signed up for the program.
Wow.
So we ran it multiple times, and several of those people said, you just got to keep doing this. This is where what you should be introducing into academies as well. So I basically developed the program around the medical experience that I cited. And basically, Kevin Gilmartin is always my kickoff because he talks about emotional survival, and he talks about cynicism, he talks about anger and that biological roller coaster.
Yeah.
And my approach is biological. I basically follow Dr. Benson's and Dr. Kabat-Zinn's program parameters, which is you've got to spend time with a personal ritual. A lot of the men and women that I work with work out, but not all of them. And working out the right way is another way that I work with them on how to reduce stress. But whether it's exercise, yoga, breathing, or religious prayer, it doesn't matter what you do, I will show you how to utilize your breath to be able to cause what Dr. Benson calls the relaxation response. That is, that through a breathing technique that he has proven categorically works, because, as you know, in a college setting, I could not bring these into courses that I teach without having all the documentation to satisfy the curriculum committee.
Right. So
this has all been proven medically. My job was to get it in a language that police officers would accept. So I started with the chiefs, then I went to the presidents of the unions, because in this region that's a very important, powerful group. And then I went to administrators and then line officers. And I probably do 2 or 3 trainings of 10 or 12 people each year. And they've been very loyal. They're still in contact with me, and not always when they're under stress.
That's good.
That's how I got started. And my program is basically based upon 2 books, Kevin Gilmartin's Emotional Survival and Dr. Herbert Benson's The Relaxation Response. I've developed a CD that I'd be willing to send anybody who wants to get it. I usually can get some of my police brothers and sisters to make copies for you, but whatever it costs to copy it and send it, I'd be glad to send it out.
Wow.
And it's exercises that teach you how to breathe over a 5 or 10 minute period after your shift, before you go home for dinner, or before you go to bed, those times when stress really starts bothering you. And it's a practice. We now know neurologically that you can change your brain. And this breathing technique will actually change your brain to give you more gray matter in the section of the brain that helps you relax, which Kevin Gilmartin refers to as the parasympathetic nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Sympathetic nervous system is that part of the brain that causes you fight or flight, which is basically what police officers are continually doing.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. So that's basically a rough outline, John, and I'll go wherever you would like to go to describe it.
Well, thank you very much. And don't let me forget to follow up on that at the end so that we have some contact information for you so that people know how to reach you.
Sure.
But I'm wondering, you said something really interesting. And I, in my career, one of the things that I did was manage our community policing initiative. And I've heard this before, but I'd love to hear you elaborate on it, that in many cases you found that by doing community policing, which is a good thing, it actually creates more stress for the police officers on the street.
Yeah, it wasn't the fact that the community policing created more stress. It was the fact that no one trained them.
Uh-huh.
So I went into some of the places around here. We started training. In fact, the first time I did the training around here, I did one day and George Kelling did the other day.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I realized that, you know, there was some need here for the training. But the training doesn't always proceed, as you know. And there was a lot of working on the fly. But the actual contact with the citizens, police officers said they loved.
Right.
They loved that component of being able to see legitimate citizens who are not either in trouble or complaining. So it was a complex reaction, but I had decided rather than go and push the innovation side, I would go push the stress reduction side.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine that sending somebody out to do community policing without any direction, without any training and problem solving, without any direction in you know, how to work with the community is like giving a brand new police officer a badge, a gun, and the car keys and saying, go out there and be a cop. It creates a lot of stress just by the fact that they're not sure what the expectations are and, you know, they're not prepared to deal with what they might confront.
Right. But the other is that from the literature that I read, surveys of police officers way back to the 1970s in Cincinnati, I remember one study, said that the primary complaint about police officers is administration and equipment. And that was always consistently high. The perception I have was only because I was working within community policing and also working with police officers who were very candid with me because I had been working with them for 20 years.
This, I find this fascinating. You and I were talking before we went live here about the issue of police suicide and some of the things you found. Let's talk a little bit about what you've discovered about police officers and stress. And I've read Dr. Gilmartin's book and understand that principle of this roller coaster that a typical police officer is on. And it's not necessarily just a street cop. And it's not just necessarily the police. It could be corrections. It could be parole. It could be communications and dispatch. And we are even seeing the same thing in firefighters. So there is this stress response that when triggered too often doesn't really go away, and it creates some major problems.
Yes. Well, along with the studying the medical components to relieve stress, the thing that perked my interest in stress from an academic point of view, I was teaching a course that I had designed called Police Studies, and I was using a film from the New York Police Foundation that they did in cooperation with the New York Police Department, where they interviewed two police officers who had, in 1986 through 89, had attempted suicide, and they were intervened by other police officers who intervened successfully. And the third interview was an interview with a woman whose husband committed suicide in which there was no intervention and he died.
Yeah.
The number of police officers, according to this film, who had committed suicide from 86 to 89, if I remember correctly, was approximately 30.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in a department of 25,000. So I was thinking, God, you've got a small town of 25,000 people. Imagine if every year 10 people committed suicide.
Yeah.
And we have a town in Massachusetts where over the last 30 years, six police officers committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And the town has probably 30, 40,000 people.
Wow.
It was written up in the Boston Globe, and police officers were interviewed, and they are still working with me. And also, small towns, small little towns, police chief has 15,000 people. So you're right. It's not just line police officers. It's all the way through, and it's not just the police profession. It's all the way through law enforcement. The second thing that I found out from attending a conference with some of the professors from John Jay, who worked very closely with the police department on suicide, was that the program lasted for about 3 years and then stopped. So in 94, 95, 96, I was curious what happened, and suicide spiked again. And during those 3 years, there appeared to be another 30 suicides. So at the time, I was teaching and not working on delivering stress reduction. I was just trying to put a program together. Mm-hmm. And this really stimulated me to say, well, you really want to focus on this area. So I did.
Can we talk? I don't expect you to be a medical expert, but can we talk a little bit about what the stress response is in law enforcement officers, particularly? And so I want to work toward what it is you're doing, but I think we need to understand a little bit about what's happening. And in Dr. Gamartin's book, he talks about the concept of hypervigilance, of being on guard almost all the time.
Right.
And this up and down roller coaster, which really kind of fries your nervous system, so that when you actually try to go home and relax, you really want to just turn everything off because you can't really handle the bandwidth any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share with me some of your findings, some of your thoughts on what stress is doing to police officers? We obviously know that suicide is a side effect, and alcoholism and a lot of other issues, but can we talk a little bit about what it does to the officer physiologically?
Sure. Just a quick stress 101. There's two kinds of stress. There's distress and eustress.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stress is very healthy. If we didn't have stress, we'd die. You know, friction, getting up in the morning. It's all stress, but it's usually positive. We're talking here about distress. And distress is anything that triggers your body. And it oftentimes, and particularly in police work, is a fight-or-flight response. And that's why Kevin Gilmartin is so effective in taking this out of the psychological realm and putting it into the biological realm.
Yeah.
And I try to stay there with the police officers I work with as well.
I agree.
The biology of it is that when you get a fight-or-flight, whether that's a physical threat, psychological threat, or just staying on your toes because you're going up to a car, and you may go up to 1,000 of them, and as Kevin said, the first 999 are no problem, but you've still got to be on your toes.
Yep.
Your fight or flight is in a part of the brain called the sympathetic nervous system. It happens automatically. You develop a habit.
Mm-hmm.
That habit can be compensated normally when you go to sleep. But as you may know, and I know a number of police officers out there know, the Police Executive Research Forum just did a study 5 years ago of police and found one-third sleep deprived.
Yep.
And so that's a deficit that you can't compensate for your fight-or-flight hypervigilance, what Kilmartin calls the biological roller coaster. How to compensate for that is sleep. What Dr. Benson says is improved is that you can do a relaxation response by simply doing a 10 or 15 minute exercise, which will then take your parasympathetic nervous system, which is the part of the brain that functions during the evening when you're sleeping, that heals you, relaxes you, and rests you.
Mm-hmm.
We can cause that consciously to happen. And that's what these programs are about at the UMass Medical Center, and this is what they're about at the Beth Israel with Dr. Benson.
Hmm.
So that biological aspect is what I focus in on and try to help people, first of all, develop a ritual, because the negative part of distress is that if you don't heal from it, you develop a general adaptive syndrome, which is your body becomes adapted to this basic biological illness. It's a wearing out of the body. And over long periods of time, like 15, 20, 30 years, in a profession where you don't get that ability to heal and relax, you can wear out. And that wears out your body, it wears out your mind. And there's some studies that indicate that there is alcohol or divorce or domestic violence prevalent in police. But to me, there's no real definite proof that it's more or less at this point. But those are the symptoms that fellow police officers, sister police officers can look for.
Yeah.
So that's the biological part of it. Was there anything else you wanted me to address?
Well, no, I think that was perfect. Thank you. Because, you know, the interesting thing about Dr. Gilmartin's work is that this is sort of a paradox. It is and I think that's the reason police officers have a hard time with this, is that, you know, they spend certainly the first years of their career, but probably their entire career, cultivating this concept of heightened awareness being on edge, preparing for the worst, and even projecting, you know, worst case scenarios so that in their minds so that they can solve these problems. Even as you're walking up to on a traffic stop, even as you're walking up to the car, you're running through a whole series of what ifs. What if they open the door? What if a gun comes out the window? What if somebody pops up in the back seat? What if the trunk lid starts to open? You go through all of these mental exercises in a few seconds that are obviously heightening your stress response to keep you on edge. And cops know that, and they trust it because it's kept them alive through 3 years, 5 years, 30 years. And then when we try to learn stress management, it's contradictory to what we've trained ourselves to do, what we've learned to do. So I'm fascinated by what you're sharing, because I heard you say it earlier, it's not just physical training, it's mental training as well, that we have to also learn to bring ourselves down from that.
Well, one of the interesting things that's happened in the last 10 years is something in neuroscience called brain plasticity, which means we now know there's proof in neurology that you can change your brain just like you can change your muscles. And police officers, for the whole that I work with, are in decent shape because most of them try to do some form of exercise. So this understanding that you can actually now train your brain by simply doing exercises every day, we can train that part of the brain that relaxes you. You're absolutely right, and Gilmartin emphasized this. You've got to keep that hypervigilance. You've got to be able to be on the edge, ready to act, because that's what keeps you and your partner alive.
Right.
There is a parallel group of people, and they're professional athletes. And one of the people I work with is a guy named George Mumford. George is a sports psychologist. George worked for 6 years with the Chicago Bulls and for 3 years with the L.A. Lakers. He was basically working with Phil Jackson. And in Phil Jackson's book, he writes about what George does. What George is basically doing with athletes is focusing them in to relax when they need to relax, so when they go out on the court, they can be what he calls in the moment. And police officers are in the moment, but no one's teaching them how to relax other than what Kevin is doing, a couple of programs, and what I'm attempting to do. And George will come in every now and then and tell stories about what's it like to work with Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen. And if these guys can do it, oftentimes it gives some credibility to police officers that, oh, this breath technique must really work. And one great story, we have the Celtics in Boston now, and one of our L.A. people we love to hate was just acquired by the Celtics. Shaq is now, as you know, he's a deputy sheriff down in Florida.
Yeah.
And Shaq was one of the guys that worked with George, because Shaq has a broken wrist from an accident. And so his foul line shooting is very, very ragged. And so he's now back in Boston, so I'm watching him all the time. And you could see when he's in the zone playing, he's bending his knees to compensate for the lack of flexibility in his wrist. But that is in the moment, in the game, at high, high fight-or-flight responses. And if you see some of his fellow players like Kevin Garnett, Kevin's up there on that biological roller coaster for the whole game, right on the edge. So I try to also incorporate that, John, into the training. I have an interview with George Mumford, the sports psychologist, and Phil Jackson. And that was another way, because at first I only worked with male officers who signed up for my course. Then female officers signed up for it. And so I now have a different approach in terms of gender issues as well.
You give me a couple of thoughts there. I want to get on to gender issues, but I think the most startling thing that I'm hearing, and it's not like I don't know this, and I think it's probably not like everybody listening doesn't know this, but
that's right.
I want to emphasize the fact that in law enforcement, we have to be well trained, and one of the things we need to do is train our minds, train our bodies, both physically and physiologically. And, you know, one of the things you just said that I thought was amazingly profound is we do all this other training to be on guard. We also need to have the other part of that training that teaches us how to relax and when to let go of that. Otherwise, as you said, we're going to run our bodies physiologically to the brink. And I know there are some studies that show that police officers have a lower life expectancy than the general population, because we're probably running our bodies in overdrive for so long that they don't function as long as an average person. Mm. So let's talk. You did differentiate this by gender, and I've seen some research in that area, and I don't know enough about it. So can you share with us what you found about the gender differences in stress management?
Yes. Very interesting, because I grew up, family of eight, lived in a housing project. One of my uncles was a cop. One of my cousins was killed. One of my cousins was a murderer doing time. So, you know, I know people intimately who've been through the law enforcement system.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically had been a male experience for me, even as a professor working with police departments, because many of them have small numbers of women. But there's a group nationally called NALI, National Association of Women Law Enforcement Leaders, and there's a local group called MALI, Massachusetts Association of Women in Law Enforcement. And I heard about them and met with the leaders and to tell them what I was doing, and they asked me to speak at their conference and become a member. So along with another male police officer, we were the first two male members of the Massachusetts Association for Women in Law Enforcement. And I started doing a survey and interviewing women, and then I went to the National Conference of NALI. And Diane Skog, who's the executive director, introduced me to police officers from around the country, because I was trying to get a sense as to whether Massachusetts was unique or not. And as you probably know, because you speak to many people around the country, this is uniform throughout the whole country. And what I found was that women have different issues of stress. I did 800 interviews of stress. 220 were women. A lot of similarities. Equipment, administration. And the irony is, if you go to the administration, you ask them who their biggest problem is, they'll tell you the bosses, and you go to the bosses, they'll blame the mayor. You go to the mayor, they blame the governor may blames the president. So, you know, the police officer is that low point, pointing up where everybody points up.
Yeah.
To another level of frustration, because they work for the two, in my opinion, two worst bosses you could in the world. One is public relations and the media, because they're always on police, and politicians. I mean, this is a tough accountability to live under, let alone what you have to do every day.
Right.
So, for women, those things were similar. Where they were different, John, was the stories. So, I'm interviewing a captain, and she said, here's my problem. My husband and I are both cops in the same department. We both come in. I outrank him. Not playing around. He doesn't want to come home and be with the captain. And I thought, geez, I never heard that story before. So I go on to another woman, and she says, well, here's my story. I go in. My husband's in, we're both in the same department. My husband's in one branch, I'm in another branch, and he's a sergeant or a captain or a lieutenant. He's an administrator, and I'm an administrator, I'm a sergeant. So I've got this one guy who was really busting my chops and does all kinds of things that really insult me in front of the other men. And my husband says to me, let me talk to him in the locker room. And she said, you ain't talking to him in the locker room. I'll lose all my respect.
Mm-hmm.
He said, so those are issues guys don't end up with, but women do.
Huh.
When you are in a higher position, when you are having to deal with stuff that they, in all good intentions, have the wrong motivation to help you with. And the third one was the most revealing to me, because when I asked them, the first question is, I'd like you to score this. Tell me when you make decisions what you put first, you, your family, or your job. Men put job, family, themselves. Women put family, jobs, themselves. And that's the opening 5 minutes of my training. And I say to them, John, my job is to put you first. Now, I know you might think that's selfish or narcissistic, but it isn't. Think of an airplane. When an airplane's going down and your kid's sitting next to you, and you grab the oxygen mask, you put it on yourself first, then you put it on your kid. You need to be healthy, have a better family, and a better police job.
Yep.
And we go from there.
I use that same metaphor when I'm training about, you know, listen to what the airlines have to say. Put on your oxygen mask first,
right,
and then you're better suited to take care of others, whether it be your own family or the people you're serving.
Right.
And yet, I think most police officers don't think that way. We live, certainly when we're younger, we live pretty vicariously and on the edge, and really don't think about, I mean, we've already decided that we could die any time, so we really don't care about anything else. And it's interesting to hear that slight but fairly profound difference between men and women in that role of caretaker, both as a police officer and as a person of in a family.
Out of the 622 surveys I did of individual police officers, who took 30 minutes to answer my survey in my presence. This was not anonymous. Three men put family first. And I asked for an explanation, and they were single fathers.
Uh-huh.
We are now actually seeing some of the men, they're outliers right now, small numbers, realizing that family comes before the job. The other is that when I first started, most of the chiefs now are retired, and I'm working with second-generation chiefs, and also five of the chiefs in the northeast of Massachusetts are graduates from my program that I taught. So these chiefs are basically looking for directions. And what they tell me is that a lot of the new kids coming out of our programs are not the kind of cops they were.
Yeah.
Strictly obey rules, regulations, and jump when you get an order. And so we have really a work cut out, because you're really dealing with X generations, Y generations, Z generations coming into the police department. And almost every 10 years now, I've been doing this for 30 years, every 10 years, there's a new edge to this.
Yep.
When I first showed Kevin Gilmartin video to a group of women, 9 out of 10 women said, "I don't have a magic chair," which is, for those in the audience who don't know, he talks about the chair that most guys have when we come home and we're exhausted. We sit in front of the TV, we just let it all go and just click to relax, have a beer, have a drink. And the woman said, "Because I'm married, I got 2 kids, I have to go home and do it."
Yeah.
So for 10 years, I qualified every time I introduced Kevin's video that some of you women may disagree with this, and that went on unchallenged till 10 years ago. And I said that to someone, and this woman said, "What are you talking about, man? For Christ's sake, that's what I do. I'm single.
Yeah.
What the hell am I going to go home and do anything? I flop in my chair, I click on my TV," so that we now have gender differences and gender alternating roles. And again, this only happens because, you know, I'm working in a training groups of 10 or 12 people at a time.
Right.
And over a period of 16 hours over 2 days back to back. And they're all from usually the same region. There's a lot of camaraderie. The third thing is, when you walk into a group of policemen as a man, I have to go through the challenge. No matter how many years I do it, I still got to go through the challenge.
Yeah.
And once you get through the challenge, then everybody will listen to you. With women, that challenge is not there. They're relating to other women fast. Within the first 15 minutes, there's a group going. Whereas with men, it's by the first afternoon or the second morning.
Mm.
And so I've been fortunate to be accepted by some great leaders in the women's movement in police and law enforcement, and they have such a network of support for each other, socially, personally, that you don't see with the male police officers. You do see with male police officers great clubs, great group activity, but sometimes that activity keeps you on the edge as well, not
yeah.
necessarily always relaxing. So that's my thoughts on the gender difference, if there's anything specific you want.
No, I thought that was excellent. And I was going to say, you know, we've covered a lot, and I think we've tantalized the people listening. Can we talk a little bit about what they can do about this?
Yes.
Give us some of your suggestions.
Well, let me start with what I think most police officers do already, and that is exercise.
Mm-hmm.
If they can do 20 minutes of exercise, we know chemically they will change their brain from the biological roller coaster and the fight or flight in that sympathetic nervous system to producing chemicals that will cause your body to relax. 20 minutes. However, you've got to do the exercise the right way. I've been in gyms where we've run training programs, nutrition programs, and I've watched police officers fight the weights. It's like a battle. Any kind of relaxation is going to come out of a smooth breathing and lifting. All physical activity is based upon the breath. And so that's what I usually try to start with police officers, that if they're doing any physical activity, try to coordinate their breath. There's a great Japanese trainer of Olympic athletes, George Mumford, trainer of the L.A. Lakers and the Chicago Bulls, 9 world championships under his assistance to Phil, and Phil's book called Sacred Hoops. They can read about this. If that's what you do, keep that up, but build in a breathing exercise. For women police officers, many of them are doing yoga. If it's a good yoga teacher, They're not doing power lifts, power yoga. They're doing breathing yoga. For those who don't like either one of those things for whatever reason, but ride bicycles, same thing. Get the breath and the rhythm of the bicycle going. Now, for those police officers who've had trouble with alcohol, and I'm a recovering alcoholic myself, there's a whole group of field AA programs in which prayer is used. And when you pray, if you breathe and pray, you stay focused on the prayers. If all of that is not for you, then I basically give people a CD that gives you a 5-minute exercise program, a 10-minute exercise program, and a 20-minute exercise program. And what the program is attempting to make a habit out of an exercise that will relax your body biologically. There's nothing, and once you calm the body, the mind calms. The psychological end of it calms. But to me, I've never could get enough data psychologically to demonstrate that. Whereas neurologically and biologically, I can prove everything we're talking about is scientific fact. My undergraduate degree was math and science. My second degree was in theater. And my third degree was in sociology. So I'm a renaissance.
Pretty diverse.
Yes. And all of that comes into play working with police officers. Hmm. The biological facts, to have the ability to act it out, because police are great actors, and then also to see some of the macro issues and some of the micro issues. And I don't know how it is around the country, but I know in Massachusetts and in New England, and particularly Massachusetts, we have some of the most highly educated police departments. I worked with a police department down in Yarmouth on the Cape, and this was 8 years ago since I was last down there.
Mm-hmm.
46 police officers, 45 had bachelor's and master's degrees, one had a PhD, two had a law degree. I mean, these are highly educated people now.
Yeah.
So we can really reach out to them with this kind of data. And I think that Kevin really started it, Kevin Gilmore. And I think Dr. Benson and Dr. Kabat-Zinn, Dr. Benson's book is called The Relaxation Response. It's a little paperback book. You can go online. You can get it used for about $4.
Okay.
And you don't need it other than the first 52 pages, which tells you exactly, summarizes exactly what we just talked about, and then how to do this relaxation exercise. The other is John Kabat-Zinn. His is K-A-B-O-T, not like the cabbage cheese, spelled differently. And he has a book called Wherever You Go, There You Are. And that is, be in that moment. Because you know, as a police officer, if you aren't in that moment, you can die. And so being in the moment is what causes that stress that's necessary to preserve you and your partner's life. Then we need to train you. How do you come down?
Yeah.
I used to train myself to come down by bending my elbow at the bar. And a lot of sisters and brothers tell me sometimes they do that too.
Yeah.
Too much.
Yeah, and
an alternative to that.
The new scary thing is that there are so many people on pain medications now. The new drug of choice is becoming pain pills. So, you know, and they think psychologically, they think, well, because that's been prescribed to me by two or more doctors, that it's okay for me to take more than I'm supposed to. And so cops have an interesting way of psychologically working themselves around some of their problems to try to cope with their stress. And this technique sounds so much more effective, and particularly since you're taking something that many of them are already doing or could easily do. You're only asking 20 minutes.
Right.
At most, it sounds like.
And even if, you know, you come out of a crummy shift, you're ticked off for several different reasons, you're pulling into the garage, you're about to go to dinner table, even if you took 5 minutes at the wheel,
mm-hmm.
it works. Now, the analogy I have to make, because people listen to this and I say, yeah, that's a lot of BS, you know, that's why he teaches at a bachelor of science place. what I have to say is, if I were talking to you about your physical muscles, saying just do 5 or 20 minutes a day, you know they would improve.
Yeah.
We now know your brain is a physical muscle. It can improve with 5, 10, 20 minutes a day. It'll take time, but you know how long it took to keep your body in shape. Why not try, as Kevin Gilmartin, to keep your biology in shape?
Yeah.
Your brain.
Wow, Ed, this is...
Not only saves you, but it saves your family. One of the most disturbing things I heard was when I had a guest. The very first time I heard about stress reduction was from a great little guy named Eddie Donovan in Boston. He started, to my knowledge, it was written up in one of the national magazines as the first stress reduction program for the Boston PD. And he came to my class 25 years ago with a police officer who was a administrator, lieutenant, captain, deputy chief, I'm not sure his exact title. And he didn't say anything. Eddie told us about, you know, generally stress and how alcohol was hurting a lot of brothers then, because it was mainly a male problem. And then the police officer spoke and said, I'm from this area of the country, so you probably read last year about a high school girl who took her father's police revolver and killed herself. That was my daughter.
Wow.
Police, family, even suicide is something that's not even approached.
Yeah.
So all of those things just seem to me to say, look, here's an area I don't hear anybody talking about. I don't see any results that are publishable in the 1990s. So we start seeing it now, and I think Kevin really broke the door, and he's now going around the country and around the world. So we just do our piece up here in the Northeast, and I'd be very glad if anybody's interested in these simple CDs, if I can get my buddies to do them for me, I'll just send them for whatever it costs to mail them.
Okay. Do you want to give some contact information, or would you like
to? Yeah, they can reach me, and you can put this on the web at Ed LeClair, EDLECLAIR, at Comcast.net, NET.
Okay.
And I've retired now from full-time teaching, and I'm just focusing mainly on stress reduction and hopefully planning to offer a program in the fall.
Excellent. This has been eye-opening and very informative, and I want to thank you for what you're doing and what you've done for the better part of your life in working with the criminal justice and law enforcement community. But particularly now, I think that the time has come for these concepts of stress reduction, and even if I can elaborate on what you just said, even, you know, some mental conditioning, mental, physiological, biological training, the time has come, because I've been saying for a long time, if we in our profession don't take charge of some of the problems, you know, we don't want anybody else to do it. And by all means, you know, we need to get control of issues like alcoholism, drug addiction, suicide, domestic violence, you know, financial mismanagement. There are all kinds of things, domestic violence. We need to make ourselves better. We need to make our profession stronger. And this is a concept that has been due for a long time. And I'm glad to hear more and more people talking about it. And I'm thrilled that you're spending your time now devoting yourself to doing that. And I thank you for your generosity in sharing with us and making these generous offers. And certainly wish you all the best of luck. And I hope that many, many people will contact you and that you'll be able to spread the word, because as much as I love Dr. Gilmartin's work, he is just one messenger, and there are just not enough messengers to go around, because here in the United States, we have over a million or close to a million law enforcement officers. We really need to be shouting this from every mountaintop and every high tall building. And there's just not enough messengers to go around. So I thank you, Ed, very much.
Well, I want to thank you also for doing it on the Internet And I would like to say to the people who are listening and to you yourself, my wish for every police officer is to always stay safe and stay healthy.
And that is a perfect close. I want to thank our guest today, Ed LeClaire, professor of criminal justice, retired, but who is doing some remarkable work in stress reduction for law enforcement officers. Thank you, Ed, for your time. And for all of you listening, thank you for your time and investing in your future. This message was brought to you by Cops Alive, where our mission is to help law enforcement professionals, and that includes the whole spectrum of wildlife, corrections, parole, communications, everybody working in and around law enforcement. We want you to find ways to be happy, healthy, successful, both on your job and beyond your job. As we say, we want you to get to Olly Olly Oxen Free. We want you to live happily ever after. Thank you for your service in law enforcement. Stay safe out there and keep up the good work.